He looked at Rip Red, and the rat gave him a slow wink.
Remember, Gregor, the prophecy calls for only 4 of the 12 to die. Think we can take them, you and I?
Okay. He also had one amazing rat on his side. The circle widened, leaving a gap. A huge, silver rat strode into the space. Jammed over one ear was a gold crown, clearly designed for a human head. Gregor heard Luxa inhale sharply and guessed it had belonged to one of her parents.
King Gorgor, said Rip Red, giving a low bow. I did not hope we would have the honor of your presence here.
An unfortunate crawler told us you drowned, Rip Red, said the king in a low voice.
Yes, well, that was the plan, said Rip Red, nodding. But so often plans go awry.
We must thank you for bringing the warrior so neatly into our paws. It was Henry's job, really, but no matter as long as he is here. I wanted to be sure. I wanted to see him for myself before I killed him, so.
This is he?
Asked King Gorgor, peering at Gregor.
I expected so much more. Oh, do not judge him too quickly, said Rip Red. I have found him most delightfully full of surprises.
He made his way around the circle, occasionally lifting a front leg to scratch his nose. Each time he lifted his paw, the rats near him flinched.
Clausen. Bloodless. Now break my heart. Razor, is that you? You have no idea how it hurts me to see you in His Majesty's company.
The rat Razor dropped his eyes away from Rip Red's. Was he ashamed? Could rats even feel ashamed? Rip Red came up behind Henry and nudged him forward.
Go, 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 stand with your friends.
Henry tripped and fell into place beside King Gorgor, stepping on his tail. The other rats laughed, but not the king, who whipped his tail out from under Henry and slashed poor Gox in half. The rats stopped laughing. Gregor saw the spider's blue blood gushing onto the ground. It was that quick. In a split second, a third member of the quest was dead.
Why has everyone stopped laughing? Said King Gorgor. Go on, laugh, he ordered.
And the rats let out a sound like sheep bleating. He stretched out on the ground in a pose of complete relaxation, but Gregor could see his muscles were still tense with anger.
Who's next? Said King Gorgor. Come. Do not be shy. Shall we take care of the pup? She looks soon to expire anyway.
He trained his ratty eyes on Boots.
Not Boots, thought Gregor. Not while I can stand.
Something nagged at the back of his brain. What was it? What did it remind him of? And suddenly he knew. He knew what the next part of the prophecy meant. The last who will die must decide where he stands. The fate of the 8 is contained in his hands. It's me, he realized. I'm the last to die. It was clear. It was Gregor the rats wanted. He was the warrior. He was the threat. He was the one who had to decide where he stood. And it wasn't going to be here, watching people he loved die. He was the warrior, and the warrior saved people. Once he knew, it was easy. He judged the height, ran 7 steps, and hurtled over the silver back of King Gorgor. A howl rose up behind him as he flew down the road. From some rat screams that came after that, he guessed Luxa, Aurora, and Rip Red had gone into action to cover him. But he was pretty sure that every able-bodied rat was chasing after him. Good. That way, with any luck, the others could escape. Except Henry and Ares. He didn't care what happened to them. The flashlight in his hand dimmed to a faint glow, and he tossed it off to the side. It was slowing him down anyway. But running in the dark was no good. He might trip. And he had to lead the rats as far away as possible from everybody. Then he remembered the light on his hat. He had meant to save it as a last resort. If there was ever a last resort, this was it. He flipped on the switch without breaking stride, and the powerful beam lit the road in front of him. But the road! He had forgotten how short the road was. No more than 100 yards ahead of him loomed the canyon, the one of immeasurable depth. He didn't stand a chance trying to run around the edge of it. The rats would have him in seconds. He didn't want to die that way. He didn't want to give the rats the satisfaction of eating him. He could hear them behind him, breathing and snapping their teeth. King Gorgor snorted in fury. In one horrible moment, the last piece of the prophecy became clear. So bid him take care, bid him look where he leaps. As life may be death, and death life again reaps. He had to leap, and by his death the others would live. That was it. That was what Sandwich had been trying to say all along, and by now he believed Sandwich. He put on a final burst of speed, just like the coach taught him in track. He gave it everything he had. In the last few steps before the canyon, he felt a sharp pain in the back of his leg, and then the ground gave way under his feet. Gregor, the Overlander, leaped. Chapter 25. Gregor soared out over the canyon, throwing his body as high into the air as he could get. He could feel warm blood running down his leg. One of the rats had gotten a claw into him just as he was taking off. "I'm falling," thought Gregor, "just like when I came to the Underland." Only he was falling much faster now. There was no current supporting him from underneath, just the hideous void gaping below him. He had never really understood how he had landed safely the first time, never had a moment of quiet and clarity to ask Vikas. Now he guessed he would never know. Maybe it was all part of the same dream and he would finally wake up in his own bed, and he could go and find his mom and tell her all about it. But Gregor knew it wasn't a dream anymore. He was really falling, and when he hit the bottom, he would not wake up in bed. Something else was different from his first fall. By the sound of it, he had a lot more company. Gregor managed to twist himself around in the air. The light from his hard hat lit up an astonishing scene. The rats who had been chasing him, and it must have been about all of them, were falling after him in an avalanche of stone. The unstable ground at the edge of the canyon had given way, bringing the whole army down after him. With shock, Gregor saw a human was among the rats. Henry! He had been chasing Gregor too. But that couldn't be right. They both couldn't end up dead. The prophecy only called for one more quester to die. A flash of wing gave Gregor his answer. Of course, it was Ares, the bat who was bonded to this traitor. Ares would save Henry, and the prophecy would be fulfilled. But the rest of the questers would be safe, too. Gregor had never seen Ares dive in earnest. He was heading for the ground at tremendous speed, dodging the rats that reached for him. Gregor began to doubt he would be able to pull out of it. He overshot, thought Gregor, as the bat rocketed past Henry. He could hear Henry's desperate plea, "Ares!" At that moment, Gregor slammed into something. "I'm dead," he thought. But he didn't feel dead because his nose hurt so badly and his mouth was full of fur. Then he had the sensation of rising, and he knew he was on Ares's back. He looked down over the side of the bat's wing and saw the rats beginning to burst apart on the rocks below. Gregor had been almost at the bottom when Ares had caught him. The sight of the rats was unbearable, even if they had just been about to kill him. Just before Henry hit, Gregor buried his face in Ares's fur and covered his ears. The next thing he knew, they were on the ground. Luxa had his father strapped on Aurora. Temp bolted onto Ares behind him. A bloody Rip-Red stood with three other rats that must have joined him in the final moments. He gave Gregor a bitter smile.
Delightfully full of surprises.
What will you do, Rip-Red? Asked Gregor.
Run, boy. Run like the river. Fly you high, Gregor the Overlander, said Rip-Red as he took off down the road.
Fly you high, Rip-Red. Fly you high, shouted Gregor as Ares and Aurora sped over the rat's head. They flew out over the canyon. Somewhere beneath them lay the bodies of King Gorgor, his army of rats, and Henry. The canyon ended, and the bats headed into a large tunnel that twisted and turned every which way. Now that he was safe, Gregor began to feel the fear of falling into that black void. His whole body began to shake. He pressed his face deep in Ares's neck, although it made his nose throb even more. He heard the bat whisper, I did not know, Overlander. I swear to you, I did not know. I believe you, Gregor whispered back. If Ares had known about Henry's plot, Henry would be flying somewhere right now, and Gregor would be... The last words of the prophecy came back to him again. The last who will die must decide where he stands. The fate of the eight is contained in his hands. So bid him take care, bid him look where he leaps, as life may be death, and death life again reaps. So it was about Henry as well as Gregor. Henry had decided to stand with the rats. That had determined the fate of the other eight questers. He had not taken care where he'd leaped. He had not looked at all because he was so caught up in helping the rats. Henry had died because of his decision. Even to the last moments he must have thought Ares would save him. But Ares had chosen to save Gregor.
Overlander, we have troubles, whispered Ares, interrupting his train of thought.
Why, what's wrong? Asked Gregor.
Aurora and I, we do not know which direction leads back to Regalia, said Ares.
You mean we're lost? Said Gregor. I thought Luxa said you could get us home in the dark.
Yes, we can fly in the dark, but we must know which way to fly, said Ares. This area is uncharted by flyers.
What does Luxa think we should do? Asked Gregor. There was a pause. Gregor assumed Ares was communicating with Aurora. Then Ares said,
Luxa cannot speak.
Luxa is probably in shock, thought Gregor, after what Henry did to her.
To complicate matters, Aurora has a torn wing that must soon be mended if we are to continue, Ares added.
Gregor suddenly realized he was in charge. Okay, look for a safe place to land, all right? The twisting tunnel soon opened out over a large river. The source was a magnificent waterfall that poured out of a stone arch and fell 100 feet to the river below. Above the arch was a natural stone ledge, about 10 feet deep. Ares and Aurora coasted over to it and landed. Their riders slid onto the stone. Gregor hurried over to Luxa, hoping to figure out some kind of game plan. But one look at her told him he was on his own. Her eyes were unfocused, and she trembled like a leaf.
Luxa, Luxa, he asked.
As Aurora had reported, she couldn't say a word. Not sure what else to do, Gregor wrapped her in a blanket. He turned to Aurora next. Her left wing had a long rip that oozed blood. I can try to sew that up, said Gregor, not relishing the idea. He could sew a little, buttons and small tears. The idea of taking a needle to her delicate wing worried him.
Tend to the others first, said Aurora. She fluttered over to Luxa and wrapped her good wing around the girl.
Boots still slept on Temp's back, but her forehead was cooler. The medicine seemed to have quieted his dad down, too, but Gregor was still unnerved by how fragile he looked. Clearly the rats had half-starved him. He wondered what else they had done. Ares sat hunched over in a position of such extreme sorrow that Gregor decided it was best to leave him alone. Henry's deception had nearly destroyed the bat. No one seemed physically injured by their encounter with King Gorgor's army, except Aurora and himself. Gregor opened the first aid kit and fumbled around inside. If he was going to stitch up the bat, he'd better do it before he thought too much about it. He found a small pack of metal needles and chose one at random. Several spools of spinner's silk were in the kit as well. He started to ask Gox which kind he should use, but stopped himself when he remembered the blue blood pouring out over her lifeless orange body. He picked out a thread that looked thin, but strong. He cleaned off Aurora's wound as well as he could and applied an ointment she told him would numb the area. Then, with great trepidation, he began to sew up the rip. He would have liked to move quickly, but it was slow, careful work mending the wing. Aurora tried to sit motionless, but kept reacting to the pain involuntarily. "Sorry, I'm sorry," he kept saying. "No, I am fine," she would reply, but he could tell it hurt a lot. By the time he'd finished, he was dripping with sweat from concentrating so hard. But the wing was back in one piece. "Try that out," he said to Aurora, and she gingerly stretched her wing. "It is well sewn, Overlander," she said. "It should hold to regalia." Gregor felt relieved and a little proud he had managed it. "Now you must address your own wounds," Aurora said. "I cannot fly anyway until the numbness leaves my wing." Gregor washed off his leg and put on some ointment from a red clay pot he remembered Solovet using for wounds. His nose was another matter. He wiped off the blood, but it was still swollen twice its normal size. It was broken, most certainly, but he didn't know what doctors did for a broken nose. You couldn't really put a cast on it. He left it alone, thinking he'd probably do more harm than good trying to fix it. Once he'd taken care of their injuries, Gregor had no clue what he should do next. He tried to assess their situation. They were lost. They had enough food for maybe one more meal. Lux's torch had burned out, leaving only his hard hat for light. Boots was sick. His dad was incoherent. Luxa was in shock. Aurora was wounded. And Ares was in despair. That left him and Temp. "Temp," said Gregor, "what do you think we should do next?"
"I know not, Overlander," said Temp. "Hear you the rats hear you?"
"When they fell, you mean?" asked Gregor.
"Yeah, that was awful."
"No, hear you the rats hear you?" repeated Temp. "Now?"
Gregor felt a cold sickness fill his stomach.
"Where?"
He crawled out to the edge of the ledge on his stomach and peered out. Rats were gathering, hundreds of them, on the banks beside the river. Several were sitting back on their haunches, their claws scraping at the chalky stone wall that flanked the waterfall. A couple tried to climb it and slid back to the ground. They began to scrape footholds in the surface. It would take time for them to scale the wall, but Gregor knew they would do it. They would find a way. He crawled back from the ledge and wrapped his arms tightly around his knees. What were the questers going to do? Well, they would have to fly. Aurora would just have to manage if the rats climbed the wall. But fly where? The light in his hard hat couldn't last forever. Then he'd be in pitch black with a bunch of invalids. Had they gone through this whole nightmare only to end up dying in the Deadland? Maybe Vicus would send help. But how would he know where they were? And who knew how things were going in Regalia anyway? Gregor and Henry had played out the last stanza of The Prophecy of Grey. But did that mean the humans had won the war? He had no idea. Gregor squeezed his eyes shut and pressed his palms into them. He had never felt so desolate in his whole life. He tried to console himself with the idea that the prophecy of Grey had said that 8 of them would live. Well, Rip-Red will probably manage, but if the 7 of us sitting on this ledge are going to survive, we'll need a miracle, he thought. And that's when the miracle happened.
Gregor?
Said a puzzled voice. He wasn't really sure he'd heard it.
Gregor, is that you?
Slowly, not willing to believe it, Gregor lifted his eyes toward the sound. His dad had weakly propped himself up onto one elbow. He was shaking from the exertion, and his breath was shallow, but there was a look of recognition in his eyes. Dad? He said. Dad?
What are you doing here, son?
Said his dad, and Gregor knew his mind was clear. He couldn't move. He should have run into his dad's arms, but he suddenly felt afraid of this stranger dressed in rat skins who was supposed to be his father. Was he really sane now? Or by the time Gregor crawled across the few feet of stone that separated them, would he again be mumbling about fish and abandoning Gregor to the darkness?
Kiko, piped a little voice. Kiko, me out,
said Boots. Gregor turned and saw her struggling to free herself from the webbing that secured her to Temp's back. He hurried over to her and ripped away the webs. It was easier than dealing with his dad.
Drink? Breakfast? Said Boots as he pulled her free.
Gregor smiled. If she wanted to eat, she must be better.
Cookie?
She said hopefully. Okay, okay, he said. But look, look who's here. It's Dada, said Gregor, pointing to his father. If they went together, maybe Gregor would have the courage to face his dad.
Dada?
Said Boots curiously. She looked at him, and a big smile spread across her face.
Dada,
she said. She wiggled out of Gregor's grasp and ran straight into his dad's arms, knocking him flat on his back.
Margaret?
Said his dad, struggling to sit up.
Are you Margaret?
No, I Boots,
said the little girl, tugging at his beard. Well, Boots's courage might only count when she could count, but her ability to love counted all the time. Watching her, Gregor felt his distrust beginning to melt away. He had fought rats and spiders and his own worst fears to reunite with his dad. What was he doing sitting here like he'd bought a ticket to see the event?
Boots, huh? Said his dad.
He broke into a very rusty laugh. The laughter swept through Gregor like waves of sunshine. It was him. It really was his dad.
Dad!
Gregor half stumbled, half ran to his dad and threw his arms around him.
Oh, Gregor,
said his dad with tears pouring down his face.
How's my boy? How's my little guy?
Gregor just laughed as he felt his own tears starting.
What are you doing here? How did you get to the Underland?
Asked his dad, suddenly sounding worried. Same way as you, I guess, said Gregor, finding his voice. Fell out of the laundry room with Boots. Then we came looking for you, and here you are. He patted his dad's arm to prove it was true. Here you are.
Where exactly is here?
Asked his dad, peering around in the darkness. Gregor snapped back to reality. We're above a waterfall in the Deadland. A bunch of rats are trying to scale the wall. A lot of us are hurt, and we're totally lost, he said. Then he regretted it. Maybe he shouldn't have told his dad how bad it was. Maybe he couldn't handle it yet. But then he saw his dad's eyes sharpen in concentration.
How far are the rats from us now?
He asked. Gregor slid over to the edge and looked over. He was frightened to see the rats were halfway up the wall. Maybe 50 feet, he said.
How about light?
Asked his dad. Only this, said Gregor, tapping his hat, and I don't think the batteries will last much longer. In fact, the lights seemed to be dimming as he spoke.
We've got to get back to Regalia, said his dad.
I know, but none of us knows where it is, said Gregor, helplessly.
It's in the north of the Underland, said his dad.
Gregor nodded, but he didn't see what good that information did them. It wasn't as if they had a sunset or the North Star or moss growing on the north side of trees to guide them. They were in a big, black space. His dad's eyes landed on Aurora's wing.
That bat. How did you sew her up?
A needle and thread, said Gregor, wondering if his dad's mind was beginning to wander again.
Metal needle? Asked his dad. Do you still have it?
Yeah, here, said Gregor, pulling out the pack of needles. His dad took a needle and pulled a small stone out of his pocket. He began to rub the stone along the needle in short, quick strokes.
Get some kind of bowl. Dump out that medicine if you have to, said his dad, and fill it with water.
Gregor quickly followed his instructions, still unsure. So, what are we doing?
This rock. It's a lodestone, magnetic iron ore. There was a pile of them back in my pit. I kept one in my pocket, just in case, said his dad.
Just in case what? Asked Gregor.
Just in case I ever escaped. I had some pieces of metal back there, too, but nothing the right size. This needle is perfect, said his dad.
Perfect for what? Asked Gregor.
If I rub the needle with the lodestone, I'll magnetize it. Basically, I'll turn it into a compass needle. If we can get it to float on the water without breaking the surface tension...
His dad gently slid the needle into the water. It floated. Then, to Gregor's amazement, the needle turned 45 degrees to the right and held steady.
It will point... north.
It's pointing north? Just like a compass? Asked Gregor in astonishment.
Well, it's probably off a few degrees, but it's close enough, said his dad.
Gregor grinned into the bowl of water. It was going to be okay. His dad was back. The sound of claws digging into stone wiped the grin off his face. Aurora, called Gregor, can you fly?
I think I must, said Aurora, clearly aware of the rats.
Ares, if I point you toward Regalia now, can you stay on course? Asked Gregor, giving the bat a little shake.
I can stay well enough on course if I know the direction to fly, said Ares, rousing himself.
Mount up, called Gregor, just as Vicus had when they'd started the quest.
Mount up. We're going home.
Somehow, everyone got loaded up. Gregor had Temp ride with Luxa, just to keep an eye on her. He slid Boots in the backpack and helped his dad onto Ares. He checked the needle in the bowl one more time and pointed Ares in the right direction. That's north. That's the way to Regalia, he said. Gregor was about to retrieve the bowl when he saw the first rat claw catch the top of the ledge. He leaped onto Ares's back, and the bats took off, leaving the bowl and a pack of cursing rats behind. Ares followed the tunnel that headed north, and after about an hour he called to Gregor,
I know now where we fly.
They flew straight for Regalia now, down wide, open caverns. Everywhere there were victims of the war. Gregor saw the bodies of rats, humans, roaches, spiders, bats, and other creatures he didn't even know lived in the Underland, like mice and butterflies. No, Ripret had mentioned butterflies, but Gregor thought he had seen them in the Overland somehow. All the bodies looked the same. Very, very still. It was almost a relief when the light on his hard hat finally gave out. He had seen enough carnage. In the darkness, he lost all track of time. Gregor could hear the horns signaling their approach long before they reached the city. He looked down vaguely and saw people waving their arms, shouting. Neither he nor Luxa responded.
Luxa was not even looking. From the moment they had taken off, she had wrapped her arms around Aurora's neck and closed her eyes to the world. Gregor couldn't imagine what she must be feeling. He had his dad back. Boots was safe. They would go back to the Overland, and his family would be together again. But Henry was Luxa's family, and he had given her over to the rats. What was there left for Luxa to feel now? The doors were flung open at the stadium, and the city appeared below them. There was cheering and waving of flags. The palace came into view, and Ares dove for the high hall. They coasted in, and the exhausted bats simply landed on their bellies and slid along the floor until they stopped. Underlanders swarmed them. Somewhere in the confusion he saw Dulcet cradling Boots and hurrying from the hall with the ever-faithful Temp behind them. A couple of people laid his dad on a stretcher and whisked him away. The bats could barely protest as they were carried away too, more in need of rest than medical attention. Gregor resisted all attempts to be loaded on a stretcher, although he did accept a cold cloth for his nose. Someone needed to tell the story, and he didn't think it could be Luxa right now. There she stood, pale and lost, not even noticing the whirlwind around her. Her beautiful violet eyes were vacant, and her hands hung limply at her sides. He went to stand at her side, but he didn't touch her. He just let her know he was near. "Luxa, it's going to be okay," he said. He knew the words sounded hollow. The room cleared out, and he saw Vicus hurrying toward them. The old man stopped a few feet in front of them, deep lines of concern cut into his face. Gregor knew he had to say what had happened. But all that came out was, Henry was working with the rats. He made some deal for the throne. Vicus looked at Luxa and opened his arms. She stood, still frozen, staring at him as if he were a complete stranger. "Luxa, it's your grandpa," said Gregor. It seemed like the best and most important thing to say at the moment. "It's your grandpa." Luxa blinked. A tiny tear formed at the corner of her eye. A battle took place on her face as she tried to stop the feelings rising up inside her. The feelings won, and to Gregor's great relief, she ran into Vicus's arms. Chapter 26. It was Solovet Gregor ended up telling the story to. She appeared shortly after Vicus, and, having kissed Luxa's wet cheeks, embraced Gregor. If he was not concerned about his injuries, she was. She immediately led him down to the hospital section of the palace to be treated. While doctors cleaned and stitched his leg and tried to bring down the swelling in his nose, Gregor spilled out everything that had happened since they had parted. The journey through the rancid caves, the arrival of the spiders, Henry's attempt to kill Rip-Red, Boots's fever, Tick's sacrifice at the bridge, finding his dad, and the strange series of events that had fulfilled Sandwich's prophecy. When he had finished, he felt like a balloon someone had let all the air out of. He just wanted to see his dad and Boots, and then go to sleep. Solovet led him first to Boots, who was in a nursery with other sick kids. She had been bathed and changed, and while she was still warm to the touch, Dulcet promised him the illness was not serious. "We cannot cure many things still, but we can cure this. It is just a case of damp fever," she said soothingly. Gregor smoothed back Boots's curls and went on to see his dad. His father already looked better, his face relaxed in sleep. The Underlanders had not only bathed him, but they'd groomed his hair and beard. The foul rat skins had been replaced by silken garments. They'd fed him and given him a calming medicine. "And when he wakes, will he be okay?" asked Gregor. "No one who spends years with the rats can expect to be unchanged," said Solovet gently. "But will his mind and body heal? I believe so. Gregor had to be satisfied with that. He himself would never be the same after what he'd witnessed in the Underland. He had to expect some changes in his dad, too. As he left the hospital, he heard a happy voice cry out, "Overlander!" Marith caught him up in a big bear hug. Gregor was glad to see Marith was alive, although he had injuries from recent battles. "Hey, Marith," he said, "how's it going?" "It goes darkly, as it always goes in war, but you have brought back light to us," he said firmly. "Oh, yeah?" said Gregor. He'd pretty much forgotten that part of the prophecy. "An overland warrior, a son of the sun, may bring us back light. He may bring us back none." So he must have done it after all, brought back light. He wasn't really sure how, but if Marith said so, all the Underlanders must believe it. "What light?" he asked. The images that filled his head were relentlessly dark. When news of King Gorgor's death reached the rats, they fell into chaos. We have driven them far back into the Deadland. Without a leader, they are in total disarray, said Marith. Oh, good, said Gregor. I hope it lasts. Marith took him to his old room, the one he'd shared with Boots. He took a short bath, just to lose the smell of rotten eggs that clung to him from the dripping tunnel, and fell into bed. When he awoke, he sensed he had slept a long time. For the first minute or two, he lay in drowsy security, not remembering. Then, all that had happened flashed before his eyes, and he couldn't stay in bed any longer. He took a second bath, and then ate the food that had appeared in his room while he was gone. Gregor was about to go to the hospital when Luxa ran into his room. Her eyes were red from crying, but she seemed her old self. "Gregor, you must come, hurry," she said, grabbing his arm and pulling him after her. His first thought was that there'd been an attack on the palace, but that was not it. "It's Ares. They mean to banish him," gasped Luxa, as the two of them sprinted down the corridors. "He did not know, Gregor. He did not know of Henry's plot any more than I." "I know he didn't," said Gregor. They burst into a room Gregor had not yet seen. It was like a small arena. Several hundred bats and humans sat on elevated bleachers that rose up around a central stage. In the front row sat members of the Regalia Council, including Vicus and Solovet. In the middle of the stage, alone and stooped, stood Ares. When Gregor and Luxa ran onto the stage, Aurora fluttered out of the bleachers to join them. "Stop!" yelled Gregor, trying to catch his breath. "You can't do this!" He didn't know all the ins and outs of banishment, but he did remember Luxa saying that no one survived living in the Underland alone for long. Maybe a rat like Ripred could, but he was extraordinary under any conditions. Everyone rose to their feet at Gregor's appearance and bowed in unison.
"Welcome, warrior, and many thanks for all you have brought us," said Vicus formally. But he also gave Gregor a sad smile that felt much more personal.
"Yeah, you're welcome," said Gregor. "What are you doing to Ares?"
"We are about to vote on his fate," said Vicus. "There has been much debate about whether he was privy to Henry's plot."
"He wasn't," said Gregor. "Of course he wasn't, or I wouldn't be standing here. He saved me and let Henry fall when he realized what was happening."
"He was bonded to Henry," said a large red bat. "It is difficult to believe in his innocence."
"What of my innocence?" asked Luxa, her voice tight. "No one was nearer to Henry than myself. Will you banish me as well?"
An uncomfortable murmur ran through the room. Everyone knew how close the cousins had been, and yet Luxa had been the target of Henry's treachery.
"Even if Ares is cleared on charges of treason, there is still the issue of his breaking of the bond," said the Red Bat. "That is in itself a cause for banishment."
"Even when you find out you're bonded to a really evil guy?" asked Gregor.
Seems like there ought to be a special rule for that. Several members of the council began to dig through piles of old scrolls, as if hoping to find an answer to his question. But others were clearly after blood.
Whether he is banished for treason or bond-breaking, I care not. I just want him gone. Who among us could ever trust him again? Shouted a woman.
There was an uproar in the arena. Ares seemed to hunch down even further, as if crushed by the weight of the anger against him. Gregor didn't know what to do. He couldn't stand by and watch them throw Ares out into the Deadland to fend for himself. But how could he change their minds? The red bat echoed the last words Gregor had heard clearly.
Yes. Who among us could ever trust him again?
I could, yelled Gregor, silencing the crowd. I trust him with my life.
And then he knew what he needed to do. He ran to Ares and extended his hand. The bat lifted his head in puzzlement, then understood.
Oh no, Overlander, he whispered. I am not worthy to accept.
Gregor reached out and grabbed the claws on Ares' left wing with his right hand. You could hear a pin drop in the room as he spoke the words.
Ares the Flyer, I bond to you.
That was all he could remember of the pledge Luxa had told him, but she was right behind him, feeding him the words in a whisper. Our life and death are one. We, too. In dark, in flame, in war, in strife. And the last line came to Gregor without prompting. I save you as I save my life. Some hope had come back into Ares. The warrior bonding with him was no guarantee he would escape banishment, but it was something that could not be easily ignored. Still, he hesitated.
Say it, said Gregor softly. Please say it back.
And Ares finally did, replacing his name with Gregor's own.
Gregor the human, I bond to you. Our life and death are one, we two. In dark, in flame, in war, in strife, I save you as I save my life.
Gregor stepped back to face the crowd. He and Ares stood before them, hand still locked to claw. Gregor spoke with a power that was entirely new to him.
I am the warrior. I am he who called. Who among you dares banish Ares, my bond?
Chapter 27. There was anger and argument and a lot of talk about the law, but in the end, they couldn't banish Ares. The fact that Gregor bonded with the bat carried more weight than he had expected. One old man still dug furiously through his scrolls until Vicus said to him,
Oh, stop rattling your skins. We clearly have no precedent for this.
Gregor turned to his new bat.
Well, I probably won't be here much longer.
It matters not, said Ares. While I have flight, I will be here always for you.
As soon as things settled down, Gregor made a beeline for the hospital. He braced himself before entering his dad's room, fearing he might have relapsed. But when he went in, a happy scene awaited him. His dad was sitting up in bed laughing as Boots tried to feed him cookies.
Hey, Dad, he said with a smile.
Oh, Gregor, said his dad, beaming at him.
His dad held out his arms and Gregor rushed into them and held on tightly. He could have stayed there forever. But Boots was tugging on them.
No, Gigo, Dada eat cookie, she said.
The nurse told her to make me eat, and she takes her job very seriously, said his father with a smile.
You feel okay? Asked Gregor, not letting go.
Oh, a few square meals, I'll be as good as new, said his dad.
They both knew it wasn't that simple.
Life would never be the same again, but they would have their life back, and they would have it together. Gregor spent the next few hours just hanging out with his dad, Boots, and Temp, who came in to check on the princess. He wouldn't have asked his dad about his ordeal, but he seemed eager to talk.
That night, the night I fell, I couldn't sleep. I went down to the laundry room to play a little saxophone. I didn't want to wake anybody.
We fell from there, too, said Gregor, through the air duct.
Right. The metal grate just started banging up and down out of nowhere, said his dad. When I went to check it out, I got sucked right down here.
See, they have this strange phenomenon with the air currents. And his dad went on for 20 minutes about the scientific aspects of the current. Gregor didn't know what he was talking about, but it was great just to listen to him.
I was in Regalia for a couple of weeks, and I was just going crazy missing you all, so one night I tried to escape with a couple of flashlights and a BB gun I found in the museum. Rats got me before I made it to the waterway, said his dad, shaking his head.
How come they let you live? Asked Gregor.
It wasn't me. It was the gun. After I ran out of ammo, they closed in on me. One of them asked about the gun, so I just started talking a blue streak about it. I convinced them I could make them, so they decided to keep me alive. I spent my time making weapons that I could use, but that fell apart when the rats touched them. A crossbow, a catapult, a battering ram. Lucky thing you showed up when you did. I think they were beginning to suspect I was never going to make them anything that worked twice, said his dad.
I don't know how you stood it, said Gregor.
I just never stopped believing I'd get home again, said his dad.
A cloud came over him, and he had a lot of trouble getting the next question out.
So, how's your mom?
Probably not too good right now, said Gregor.
But she'll be fine once we get you back.
His dad nodded.
And you?
Gregor didn't talk about any of the bad stuff, just the easy stuff. He told his dad about track and school and playing his saxophone at Carnegie Hall. He never mentioned spiders or rats or what he'd been through since his dad had disappeared. They spent the afternoon playing with Boots, trying to make each other eat, and often, without any particular reason, reaching out to touch each other. Dulcet showed up eventually and insisted Boots and his dad needed rest, so Gregor wandered off into the palace feeling happier than he had in 2 years, 7 months, and he no longer cared how many days. He was done with the rule now. For good. Even if times got bad, he would never again deny himself the possibility that the future might be happy, even if the present was painful. He would allow himself dreams. As he was making his way back to his bed, he passed the room he'd been taken to as a prisoner the night he'd tried to escape Regalia. Vicus was sitting at the table alone, surrounded by piles of scrolls and maps. His face lit up when he saw Gregor, and he waved him into the chamber.
Come, come. We have not yet spoken since your arrival, he said eagerly. How does your father?
Better, much better, said Gregor, sitting across from Vicus.
And the princess?
Said Vicus with a smile. She's good, no more fever, said Gregor. For a minute they just sat there, not sure where to begin.
So, warrior, you leaped, said Vicus.
Yeah, I guess I did, said Gregor, grinning. Lucky Ares was there.
Lucky for Ares, too, said Vicus. Lucky for us all. Know you the rats are in retreat?
Marith told me, said Gregor.
I believe the war will soon be at an end, said Vicus. The rats have begun to battle one another for their throne.
What about Ripred? Said Gregor.
I've heard from him. He is assembling a party of rats sympathetic to his cause in the Deadland. It will not be an easy task to take leadership of the rats. He must first convince them that peace is desirable, and that will be a long struggle. Still, he is not an easy rat to ignore, said Vicus.
I'll say, said Gregor, even other rats are afraid to fight him.
With good reason.
No one can defend themselves against him, said Vicus.
Ah, that reminds me. I have something for you. Several times on the journey you made mention of your lack of a sword. The council asks me to present you with this.
Vicus reached beneath the table and brought out a long object wrapped in very thick silk. Gregor unrolled it and found a stunningly beautiful sword studded with jewels.
It belonged to Bartholomew of Sandwich himself. It is the wish of my people that you accept it, said Vicus.
I can't take this, said Gregor. I mean, it's too much. And besides, my mom won't even let me have a pocket knife. This was true. On Gregor's 10th birthday, his uncle had sent him a pocket knife with about 15 attachments, and his mom had put it away until he was 21.
I see, said Vicus.
He was watching Gregor carefully.
Perhaps if your father kept it for you, she would allow it.
Maybe, but there's another thing, said Gregor. But he didn't know how to say the other thing, and it was the main reason he didn't want to touch the object in front of him. It had to do with Tick and Treflex and Gox. It had to do with all the creatures he'd seen lying motionless on his trip back. It even had to do with Henry and the rats. Maybe he just wasn't smart enough. Maybe he just didn't understand. But it seemed to Gregor that there must have been some way to fix things so that everybody hadn't ended up dead. I pretended to be the warrior so I could get my dad. But I don't want to be a warrior, said Gregor. I want to be like you.
I have fought in many battles, Gregor, said Vicus cautiously.
I know, but you don't go looking for them. You try to work things out every other way you can think of first, even with the spiders. And Rip-Red, said Gregor. Even when people think you're wrong, you keep trying.
Well then, Gregor, I know the gift I would wish to give you, but you can only find it yourself, said Vicus.
What is it? Said Gregor.
Hope, said Vicus. There are times it will be very hard to find, times when it will be much easier to choose hate instead. But if you want to find peace, you must first be able to hope it is possible.
You don't think I can do that? Said Gregor.
On the contrary, I have great hope that you can, said Vicus with a smile.
Gregor slid the sword back across the table to him. Tell them I said thanks, but no thanks.
You cannot imagine how happy I am to deliver that message, said Vicus. And now you must rest. You have a journey tomorrow.
I do? Where? Not back to the dead land, said Gregor, feeling a little ill.
No.
I think it is time we send you home, said Vicus. They put a bed in his dad's room that night so that he and Boots could sleep close by. Now that he was going home, Gregor began to let thoughts of Lizzie and his grandma, and, most of all, his mom come back into his head. Would they still be okay when he got back? He remembered his talk with Vicus and tried to hope for the best. As soon as his dad and Boots had woken, they were taken to the dock where Gregor had made his escape the first night. A group of Underlanders had assembled to see them off.
Ares will take you to the portal above the waterway, said Vicus. It will be a short distance from there to your home.
Marith pressed a handful of paper into his hand. He realized it was money. I took it from the museum. Vicus said you may need it to travel in the overland.
Thanks, said Gregor.
He wondered exactly where the waterway gateway was in relation to his apartment. He guessed he'd find out soon enough. The way is safe now, but do not tarry. As you know, things can shift quickly in the Underland, said Solovet. Gregor suddenly realized he would never see these people again. He was surprised by how much he would miss them.
They'd been through a lot together. He hugged everybody goodbye. When he came to Luxa, he thought maybe he should just shake her hand, but he went ahead and hugged her anyway. She actually gave him a hug back. It was a little stiff, but then she was a queen.
Well, so if you're ever in the Overland, drop by, said Gregor.
Perhaps we shall see you here again some day, said Luxa.
Oh, I don't know. My mom's probably going to ground me for the rest of my life just to keep me safe, said Gregor.
What means this, ground you? Asked Luxa.
Never let me leave the apartment, said Gregor.
That is not what it says in the Prophecy of Bane, said Luxa thoughtfully.
What? What's that? Asked Gregor, feeling panic rise up in him.
Did Vicus not tell you?
It follows the Prophecy of Grey, said Luxa.
But I'm not in it, am I? I mean, I'm not, right?
Vicus? Said Gregor.
Ah, you must depart directly if you mean to catch the current, said Vicus, slipping the backpack with boots onto his shoulders and leading him to Ares, who was already carrying his dad.
What aren't you telling me? What's the Prophecy of Bane? Insisted Gregor as he felt himself lifted onto Ares's back.
Oh, that, said Vicus dismissively. That is very vague. No one has been able to explain it for centuries. Fly you high, Gregor the Overlander.
Vicus gave Ares a sign, and he spread his wings. What is it, though? What does it say? Shouted Gregor as they rose into the air.
Bye-bye, Temp. See you soon, said Boots, waving cheerfully.
No, Boots, no, we're not coming back, said Gregor. The last thing Gregor saw as they left the palace was Vicus waving. He was not sure, but he thought he heard the old man say,
See you soon.
Down the river he went again, but this time he was flying over the foaming water on Ares's strong back. They soon reached the beach where he'd encountered Fanger and Shed. He caught a glimpse of the blackened ground where the fire had been. 10 minutes later, the river fed into what was either a sea or the biggest lake Gregor had ever seen. Giant waves rolled across the water's surface and crashed onto rocky beaches. A pair of guards on bats appeared and escorted them over the water. Gregor didn't see any rats around, but who knew what else might be down here looking for a meal? He caught a glimpse of a 20-foot spiked tail as some creature flipped it out of the waves and then dove. Not even going to ask, he thought. The guards held their positions as Ares began to ascend into a vast stone cone. At the base, it may have been a couple of miles in diameter. A strange, misty wind seemed to be blowing them upward. Must be the currents, thought Gregor. Ares flew in tighter and tighter circles as they ascended. He had to close his wings to squeeze through the opening at the top. Suddenly, they were zipping through tunnels that looked familiar. They were not built of stone, but of concrete, so Gregor knew they must almost be home. The bat landed on a deserted stairway and nodded his head upward. I cannot go farther, said Ares. That is your way home. Fly you high, Gregor the Overlander. Fly you high, Ares, said Gregor. His hand wrapped tightly around Ares's claw for a moment. Then he let go. The bat vanished in the darkness. Gregor had to help his dad up a long flight of stairs. There was a stone slab in the ceiling at the top. When Gregor pushed it aside, a wave of fresh air hit his face. He pulled himself out, and his fingers found grass. Oh, man, he said, hurrying to help his dad out. Oh, man, look!
Moon, said Boots happily, pointing into the sky.
Yes, moon, little girl. Look, Dad, it's the moon. His dad was too winded by the climb to answer. For a few minutes they just sat in the grass, staring up at the beauty of the night sky. Gregor looked around and realized by the skyline that they were in Central Park.
He could hear traffic just beyond a row of trees. He slid the stone slab back into place and helped his dad up.
"Come on, let's grab a cab. Go see Mama Boots?" he asked.
"Yes," said Boots emphatically. "Go see Mama."
It must have been very late. Hardly anyone was out on the streets, but a few restaurants were still open. It was just as well, since they made a funny sight, all dressed in their Underland clothes. Gregor flagged down a cab, and they piled into the back seat. The driver either didn't notice or didn't care how they looked.
He'd probably seen everything.
Gregor pressed his face against the window, drinking in the buildings, the cars, and the lights. All those beautiful lights. It seemed to take no time at all to reach their apartment. He paid the driver and added a huge tip. When they came to the front door, his dad pulled out his keychain, the one Gregor had made him, from his pocket. He fanned out the keys with trembling fingers and found the right one. For once, the elevator wasn't broken, and they rode up to Gregor's hall. They opened the apartment door softly, not wanting to wake anyone. Gregor could see Lizzie asleep on the couch. From the bedroom, he could hear his grandma murmuring in her sleep, so she was okay. A light was on in the kitchen. His mother sat at the kitchen table, as still as a statue. Her hands were clasped together, and she stared fixedly at a small stain on the tablecloth. Gregor remembered seeing her that way so many nights after his dad had disappeared. He didn't know what to say. He didn't want to scare her, or shock her, or ever give her any more pain. So he stepped into the light of the kitchen and said the one thing he knew she wanted to hear most in the world. "Hey, Mom, we're home."
This is Paul Bamer. We hope you've enjoyed this unabridged production of Gregor the Overlander by Suzanne Collins. This program was produced and directed by Cindy Jo Hinkleman, executive producer Dan Musselman. Text copyright 2003 by Suzanne Collins. Production copyright 2005, Random House, Inc. All rights reserved.
Hello, this is Jim Dale, narrator of the Harry Potter audiobook series. Listening to audiobooks isn't just great entertainment. It's also a great way for your family to experience and enjoy books together. Studies have shown that listening to stories read aloud helps children build vocabulary, improve their reading skills, and succeed more readily in school. It's an important step on the road to becoming a good reader, and one of the best ways to help ensure a lifelong love of literature for the children you care about. Check your local retailer for the wide selection of audiobooks available from Listening Library. Or if you would like to visit us online for more information, check our website at www.listeninglibrary.com. Thank you, and happy listening.